This is All Things Considered on 88.5 KNKX. I'm Ed Ronco. Recently, we caught up with someone whose voice you might recognize.
Hi.
Hi.
How do you do?
Nice to meet you, Robert. I'm Ed.
Ed?
Jeffrey.
Jeffrey, how do you do?
We still send producers out with our hosts.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. It's a whole thing. Yeah.
It's a crew of two.
Yeah.
That's Robert Siegel, who hosted All Things Considered for three of his four decades at NPR News. He retired in early 2018. The other voice you heard in there was Matt Martinez, our director of content here at KNKX, who used to be, among other things, Robert Siegel's producer. Recently, Siegel was in Seattle to give a speech, and we had this reunion of sorts. Matt, who knows him, and we, who know his voice. We took the opportunity to talk a little about where we are now, both in the headlines and how we cover them. But we also know how familiar Robert Siegel's voice is to so many of you, like that of a friend. So we began our conversation the way friends would, after a long time apart. First of all, how's retirement?
I'm enjoying it a great deal. I've been living now for over a year and a half without deadlines. Generally, I have been reveling in the idea that on any given day, well, given the approval of my wife, I can do pretty much what I want to do.
Before you were All Things Considered host, you were NPR's first foreign correspondent, London.
I opened what we called our bureau. It was an office at the BBC. Technically, I was called an editor, but I was the beginning of the foreign staff overseas, yeah.
So you've reported all over the world throughout your time at NPR. You've spoken to countless people in countless places. I wonder if there's any common thing you learned from that.
Well, the first thing I think I learned was the guidance that you really have to listen to what people say. I think when I was a much younger interviewer, I went in with 20 very fully argued out questions and very carefully scripted. And the risk of doing that was that I could be talking with someone and miss a really surprising answer because I had my agenda and thought that was my job. And I learned over the years that it was also my job to listen to what someone was saying and to react to that and to push on that. And I learned that being a good interviewer, at least for me, required being a good listener.
I'm curious about the interview you never did. Is there a white whale?
It's hard. There are a lot of them. Because the bottom line is I had a fabulous job. I mean, and I got to interview a great range of people from Saul Bellow and several times Philip Roth, the writers whom I admired tremendously. Mel Brooks, which was barely an interview. It was just my trying to get a word into his comic monologue. So I wish I could have gotten an interview with President George W. Bush about the war in Iraq. I was not favored by the Bush White House, or NPR barely was, I think. But generally speaking, political interviews were the least interesting.
You're here speaking at an event for the William D. Ruckelshaus House Center, and your talk is titled The Role of the Media in a Civil and Democratic Society. So I know the way we get news has changed dramatically in the last few years. Has the role changed?
I think the role remains generally the same with an important proviso. I would have said, and I think I did say, that a story like the Obama birther conspiracy claim was not only not worth our broadcasting, but it deserved our silence. It deserved our ignoring until the governor of Hawaii officially dug up a birth certificate and there was something that disproved what had been a pretty stupid claim to begin with. The importance of that function now has gone up to identify ideas that have great currency in digital media mostly, in social media, and to test them and debunk them. And I think that's become increasingly important because of the ease with which either deluded or destructive people circulate false stories and how quickly they reach people. So that's the one difference of mission that I would find, or at least a difference in magnitude of it.
There's been an awful lot of media fragmentation, and it's easy now for you to tune in to the source that most aligns with your views so that you only hear the things you agree with. And I worry that we're operating from a different set of facts as a country sometimes.
Yes, I don't think there's anything, frankly, that new about people turning to news sources that they agree with. I think a news organization, its product is a mix of content and attitude. What things do we assume our audience knows? What don't they know? What do we think is funny as opposed to what does that place think is funny? What do we think is important? You know, these are attitudes. And I grew up in an environment where there was, on the newsstands of New York City, there were, by my childhood, 8 daily newspapers. And they were very different in the way that they treated the news. We've had news sources that divide us, but we have not, as you say, we haven't had institutions that are connected to news sources that are willing to go with untruths and that are willing to dispute what ought to be accepted fact. And that's a breakdown that isn't just about media. That must spring from our education system, from our culture more broadly. Journalists, I think, perhaps naively, believe in the notion of a marketplace of ideas where the good survive and the bad lose. There's no particular evidence for this over history, but I think it's the faith we have to bring to what we do all the time.
Any part of your news diet that we might find surprising? You scroll over to TMZ every once in a while?
I have scrolled to TMZ, not very often. I still receive 2 newspapers printed on paper every morning, and I have a few foreign newspapers on my smartphone. The cable television that I watch has come to bother me a great deal. I can find it addictive, which makes it even more worrisome as I watch it.
About a year and a half ago, Washington State University gave you the Edward R. Murrow Award for Lifetime Achievement in Journalism.
Yeah.
In your speech, you said journalism needs, and I'm paraphrasing here, a new idealism that addresses people who feel left out by a media that served the educated elite very well. What does that look like to you?
I don't know, because I don't think I've seen it. That is, I think that we have great volume of interesting reporting and writing being done for an engaged, educated elite. And I think that for people with a high school education or maybe a little bit of community college and who don't have time or inclination to read long stories, I think that the news media have gotten worse and worse. There was an old-fashioned phrase that the newspaper was the poor man's university. What I fear is that people who don't have a sophisticated knowledge of the way things work, say, in our government or in other governments, are susceptible to all kinds of wacky conspiracy theories of how things really work, and that it's important that our perception of the audience include people who, frankly, don't know which faction in Syria historically has governed the country. These are questions that require definitions and earnest reporting. And I fear that we're not really addressing an audience that should be served with a good broad news agenda and that may not be terribly educated.
Robert Siegel, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. You're welcome.
Robert Siegel was the host of All Things Considered on NPR stations nationwide for more than 30 years before his retirement in 2018. We spoke last month at the Washington State Convention Center. Now, we mentioned our director of content, Matt Martinez, at the beginning of the segment. He held many roles when he worked at NPR, including producing for Robert Siegel, and they were in New York City together on September 11th, 2001. To hear Robert tell that story, you can visit our website, knkx.org.